early intervention in its review. The agency concluded that the evidence shows that early intensive behavioral intervention results in improved cognitive and language outcomes. One finding from many of these studies is that children had better outcomes if their parents learned to use strategies at home with the children that were similar to those their therapists were using in early intervention. This makes perfect sense. Parents know their children better than anyone else. They are strongly motivated to help their children, and they spend more hours with their children than anyone else. Parents who scaffold their children's learning by using specific teaching strategies, in addition to the hours their children are receiving other interventions, are adding many more learning experiences for their children every single day. This should help their children learn more. Lately, research has begun to look more deeply into the effects of parent-delivered intervention. Various studies show that parent-delivered interventions can increase children's communication and play skills, and can increase the amount of success and fun that both parents and children have interacting with each other. When parents learn to use intervention techniques at home, young children with ASD are more likely to remember and use the skills they have been taught by teachers or therapists. Furthermore, parents who use intervention strategies report feeling happier, less stressed, and more optimistic and empowered. A recent study conducted by two of us with a co-worker looked at how parents learned the intervention techniques included in this book and how their children benefited from them. The study involved 8 families of 1- and 2-year-olds with ASD who had just been diagnosed. The families volunteered for a parent intervention program of 12 weekly sessions lasting 1 hour each. Parents learned to use a number of teaching techniques that focused on building their children's attention, communication, social interactions, and play. The parents learned to do these things. 1. Create fun and satisfying exchanges between their children and themselves. 2. Help their children's language develop by emphasizing the social power of the early sounds that children make. 3. Increase their children's nonverbal communication and imitation skills. 4. Build up their children's interest in a wide range of toys and skills in social toy play. Parents learned to use these intervention techniques during their typical playtimes at home and during their typical caregiving routines. Parents did not create hours of special teaching time. These were working parents who already spent as much time as they had taking care of their children and playing with them. They learned to use their existing time with their child in a more focused way. Were parents able to learn the intervention techniques? Yes. The study actually found that even before they were taught the techniques, parents naturally used many of these techniques between 40% and 60% of the time during their typical play activities with their children. However, after only a few hours of coaching and a few weeks of using the techniques at home, most of the parents were using the techniques over 90% of the time. The study then examined how parents' use of the techniques affected the children. Before parents began to learn the techniques, the children in the study were using almost no word-like sounds. However, once the parents started to use the intervention techniques regularly at home, most of the children began to try to say words to communicate, not just to imitate or echo. The same thing was found for children's imitation. It increased steadily once parents started to use the intervention techniques at home. Furthermore, parents were just as skilled as therapists in helping their children learn to use words and imitate. This shows that parents who learn to use intervention skills can be as effective as trained therapists in teaching their children critical new learning skills and scaffolding their children's use of their new skills. There are several different parent-delivered intervention programs available to the public, and several of these are currently being studied in ongoing research. Some examples include Hannon More Than Words, the Early Start Denver Model, Pivotal Response Training, Responsive Teaching, and Social Communication, Emotional Regulation, and Transactional Support, SCERTS. In this book, we describe a set of easy-to-use strategies that parents and other caregivers can use throughout their regular daily activities with their children to help their children engage, communicate, and learn. You can use these strategies during playtime, bathing, meal times, really any time you are with your child. This ensures that, like typical children, your child with autism is learning every minute of the day, not only while participating in an intervention program. The strategies we offer in this book are based on the Early Start Denver model. They focus on helping children become actively engaged in learning and communicating by building up their core social learning abilities. Imitation, sharing attention, initiating communication with gestures, using their voices and bodies to talk, and learning to play with other people in varied ways with toys. The strategies we offer in this book are ones that help parents and other caregivers, and therapists as well, develop these skills by being play partners with their children during child-preferred play activities and during typical caregiving routines. Parents and their children develop joyful, back-and-forth play during these activities and routines. The strategies we will teach you will help you find fun play activities that both you and your child enjoy. We will teach you how to scaffold your child's attention and learning during play and caregiving activities by following your child's interests and helping your child experience more learning opportunities. In the remaining chapters of this book, we go through these intervention techniques one by one for you. However, before we end this chapter, let's review some of the key points that we have covered here. The brain is very plastic during early development and is shaped by learning experiences. As learning occurs, connections between brain cells are formed. Infants actively explore the world, develop ideas about how the world works, and test to see if their ideas are correct. Typical infants are learning during almost every waking moment and spend most of their time interacting with people. Children with autism tend to spend less time focusing on people and more time focusing on objects than other children do. This limits their opportunities for social learning and communication. Parents can help their child with ASD learn by drawing their child's attention to important learning opportunities by exaggerating their actions and speech and providing appropriate toys, which is called scaffolding. This helps provide many learning opportunities. Early intervention with young children with autism can improve learning, play, communication, and social abilities. It can also help with problem behaviors, such as tantrums and aggression. Studies have shown that children with autism are emotionally attached to their parents and other members of their families, but may demonstrate this in different ways than typical children. Children with autism have trouble talking and have difficulty using gestures and facial expressions to communicate their needs and wishes to their parents. They usually need to be taught how to use gestures, such as pointing. Children with ASD don't readily imitate others, but they can be taught to imitate, which opens the door to learning about others. Although children with autism are drawn to objects, they may not be adept at playing with toys in varied and appropriate ways. They may be very good at operating their toys, but their play with toys tends to be overly repetitive. Intervention helps them learn to play with lots of toys in functional, social, and creative ways. Parents can learn to use intervention strategies with their children. In fact, they are able to master the techniques as well as trained therapists. Children whose parents use intervention strategies at home tend to retain the skills they learned. When parents use intervention strategies at home, this reinforces their children's learning in other intervention programs, so children are able to remember the skills they have learned and use them in many different settings. Parent-delivered interventions can help parents feel happier, less stressed, and more optimistic. When parents learn to use intervention strategies with their children, they have a more positive outlook, feel empowered, and are less likely to be depressed. Parent-delivered interventions don't require special equipment and hours of special teaching time spent working with a child. The materials required for carrying out interventions at home are simple toys and other play materials. The strategies are carried out during everyday activities such as bath time, meals, and indoor and outdoor play. Most parent-delivered interventions stress the importance of positive emotions and a happy relationship between parents and children for promoting learning. Studies have shown that the parent-child social relationship is the foundation for learning and communicating. Studies have shown that parent-mediated therapies can increase children's nonverbal and verbal abilities and play skills and can improve parent-child relationships. Empowerment is key. I remember while working as a service coordinator before I was a mother of a child with ASD, we were going to fade an ABA in-home program for a 7-year-old boy who was making minimal progress over the years. His parents were panicking. They kept saying over and over, "We don't know what we are doing. You are the experts, not us." It is vital to teach these skills to the parents, as they will be parents for life and will need to be comfortable and proficient in teaching in a way that the child learns best. Parents cannot become dependent on therapists, just like children can't. We need to strive for teaching and independence at all levels. The thing I liked most about this approach is that it felt so natural, like high-quality play that all parents would want to do with their child. Once I learned the basics, it felt easy to incorporate them throughout everything. This provided many, many opportunities for learning, while also giving us new ideas for creative ways to have fun together. Instead of being overwhelming and draining, it was fun and easy. I could see my son respond, which was motivating and encouraging. Part 2. Everyday strategies to help your child engage, communicate, and learn. 4. Step into the spotlight. Capturing your child's attention. Chapter goal. To teach you how to increase your child's attention to you so that your child's opportunities to learn from you will increase. Learning requires paying attention to people. Why your child's attention to others is so important. There are many things that young children cannot do yet, but one thing they do very well is pay attention to their environment and learn from what they see. Babies see fairly well very soon after birth, and they learn a lot about the world, people, and objects around them by watching objects and people in action. They are also surprisingly good at seeing patterns in the actions of people and objects around them. They learn to expect people to move and act in typical ways and are surprised and intrigued by unexpected events. In fact, they pay more attention to the unexpected than to the routine and predictable, so they can figure out new things. Watching and listening to people are very important learning activities for young children. Perhaps the most important learning activities because they learn so much from interacting with other people. Most babies and toddlers prefer watching people and interacting with them over any other activity. Their brains are wired in such a way that looking at and interacting with other people are the most pleasurable activities of all, assuming that they are not hungry, fatigued, or uncomfortable. What's happening in autism? However, young children with autism spectrum disorders, ASD, do not show as strong an interest in watching and interacting with people as other children do. Why would that be? There are two different possible explanations that you may read about. One suggests that children with autism have more difficulty than others understanding complex and unpredictable sights and sounds. Social interactions are certainly complex and sometimes unpredictable. They require a young child to make sense of facial expressions, speech, sounds, and gestures. Objects, on the other hand, are more predictable and generally less complex than people. When a young child acts on an object, it tends to respond in a reliable and predictable way. The child can make the object repeat the same action over and over. People act spontaneously and more variably than objects. They do not respond the same way every time. People who are trying to engage a young child can sometimes be very stimulating. They may speak very quickly and with a lot of emotion, creating a lot of sounds for the child to process at once. People may also move and gesture during interactions, talking with their hands and changing their facial expressions quickly to fit the mode and tone of the conversation. All of this information may be at times too stimulating for the child, whose response in such instances may be to fuss or to withdraw. This used to be a very popular way of understanding autism, but research suggests that this view is not the most accurate way to understand young children's decreased attention to others. The other line of thinking suggests that young children with autism are less tuned in to others from the start. This line of reasoning begins with the finding from scientists that children typically come into the world built to favor watching and interacting with people over anything else. As with any other trait, some children have less of this built-in attraction than others. In autism, this innate preference for people seems to be lessened. Because people are not so interesting, The physical world may compete more strongly for their attention than it would in a child who has a very strong built-in attraction for people. Notice that the end result of both of these theories is that children with autism find interacting with objects somewhat more interesting and interacting with people somewhat less interesting than most children do. Why is it a problem? When young children don't pay much attention to the people caring for them, they miss out on very important learning opportunities. Children need to attend to everything that other people do, their physical movements, body language, facial expressions, and words in order to learn. What very young children learn about communication, emotions, language, and social interaction comes from having lots of individual experiences with watching, imitating, and interacting with people. If they're not spending much time tuned in to their parents or others, that is, if they're not spending a lot of time focused on others' faces, voices, and actions, their learning may be slowed, especially their learning about social communication and play. To increase their rate of learning, their attention to other people has to increase. Attention throws a spotlight on others that lights them up and highlights their actions, speech, and emotions, which are so critical for social learning. In short, more attention to others equals more opportunities to learn from them. As a parent, this was the single most motivating part of the Early Start Denver model approach. It makes sense that a child can make better progress if taught to pay more attention to others as early as possible, giving more chances to learn things through those observations. Additionally, it's encouraging to work with a child who is looking at you and paying attention. Of all of the things that I learned, the techniques in this area were the ones that I used the most and found the most helpful. What you can do to increase your child's attention to people. How can you as a caregiver step into your child's attention spotlight? There are 5 specific steps you can carry out to increase your child's attention to you. Step 1. Identify what is in the spotlight of your child's attention. Step 2. Step onto the stage. Take your position. Step 3. Eliminate the competition. Step 4. Identify your child's social comfort zone. Step 5. Join in by following your child's lead. We describe how to carry out each of these steps, give you some ideas for activities to try, and suggest what you can do to solve problems that may come up. Step 1. Identify what is in the spotlight of your child's attention. Most young children with ASD are interested in objects and toys and spend much of their time manipulating and playing with them. If this is true for your child, then it will probably be easy for you to find interesting materials for play. Young children are often very motivated to obtain objects, to handle favorite objects, to create interesting effects with objects, and to get help with objects they enjoy. Most also enjoy lively physical games their parents create: roughhousing, moving in time to music, running, bouncing, and swinging. By including materials that relate to your child's interest and preferences, whether it be a favorite toy such as trains, a favorite cartoon character, or a preferred activity such as tickling, you can create learning situations in which your child is likely to attend to you and interact with you, thus learning from you. In addition, building social interactions into your child's interest in specific objects will allow you to increase your child's social skills. Social interactions will become linked with favorite activities and become more rewarding for your child. Rationale. Highly appealing materials and play activities motivate children to interact with their parents. A motivated child is a happy child, attentive to his parents, and ready to learn. Strong motivation supports active learners rather than passive observers, and active learners show initiative and spontaneity. Two important characteristics to nurture in young children with autism. A motivated child also wants to continue an activity, which gives you as the parent the chance to embed many learning opportunities into the activity. The longer the activity goes on, the more learning opportunities you can create. This is why you want to know what objects and activities your child really enjoys, so you can create learning opportunities for your child. The following activity will give you tools for identifying your child's preferred activities and materials. The questions will help you focus your own attention on your child's attentional spotlight. Activity. Figure out what your child likes. Spend time over the next few days really observing your child during the following six types of activities. 1. Toy or other object play. 2. Social play. 3. Meals. 4. Caregiving. Bathing, changing, dressing, bedtime. 5. Book activities. 6. Household chores. Here are some ideas for learning about what your child is interested in and paying attention to. In each of the six types of activities just listed, notice what your child is interested in and pays attention to. For each one, make a list of the objects, materials, toys, or physical games that your child seems to seek out and enjoy. If your child does not naturally seek out objects or physical games, set out a few materials or toys and encourage your child to manipulate or play with them to see what your child might like. Next, answer these questions from your observations of your child when he is engaging in the activities listed before. For each of the six activities, what objects or activities does my child search for? What objects does my child like to watch, grasp, or hold? What activities does my child come to me or another family member for help with or to do? What makes my child smile and laugh? What calms my child when upset or cheers my child when cranky? If your child does not have much interest in traditional play objects, then focus on your child's response to other daily activities. There are very few young children who do not approach anything or anyone or who do not act on any objects without being guided. It happens, but it's very rare. When your child moves independently, what is she moving toward or away from? When your child touches or holds anything or watches anything, what is it? When you physically play with your child, tickle, cuddle, squeeze, spin around, whatever games you play, what are your child's reactions? What does she seem to enjoy? Sometimes children's favorite objects are rather unusual for their age or are used in a repetitive, limited manner. For instance, 26-month-old Pablo spends his day with the TV remote in his hand. He keeps the TV on and switches channels as he stands in front of the TV or lies on the couch. Most of his awake time is spent in front of the TV, and efforts to turn it off or to take the remote away from him lead to big tantrums. 3-year-old Matthias likes to lie on the back of the couch and watch out the window for hours at a time. He shows very little interest in toys, people, or any activities going on in his household, even though there are toys and interesting activities around, thanks to his 4-year-old sister and the family pets. Even if your child's interests are unusual, they are interests, and you can add them to your list. There are a few young children who are not very interested in any objects or activities. For these children, we will teach you how to create more social games, also called sensory social routines, or other types of face-to-face routines, and later, how to build your child's interest in playing with toys. We describe strategies for creating those types of activities with your child in Chapter 5. One mistake I made was trying to get more and more interesting toys, hoping my son would learn to play with them if I found something that caught his attention. It was much easier and more effective to take whatever he was using as a toy and create a game around that. We developed games as simple as tickle the body part with a duster that were great fun and much more effective than imploring my son to meet his goals by obediently pointing to a body part on command. Some of my son's favorite games included spin, being held while we went in circles, bouncing in and out of the crib, and running cars around. All of these built simply on everyday activities, and then let us add more and more learning opportunities. Summary of Step 1. If you have followed along and carried out the preceding activities, you will have learned quite a lot about your child's interests, preferences, and the objects and activities that capture your child's attention. See if you agree with most of the statements in the following checklist. If so, you are now armed with important knowledge about your child's attention, knowledge you will use for Step 2. If not, start experimenting to find out what your child likes in each of these categories. Activity Checklist. What does my child like to do? I know a number of toys or objects that my child likes to play with. I know several social games, games without toys, like tickling or roughhousing, that make my child smile. I know some outdoor activities my child likes, playing on swings, walking, etc. I know some objects and activities that help make my child happier when he or she is in a bad mood. I know some songs or sounds that my child likes to listen to. I know some activities or toys I can use when I am involved in meals or caregiving activities, meals, bathing, dressing, changing, bedtime, that can make my child smile or laugh. I know what my child likes to do with books. What about Pablo? As described before, Pablo's only interest in objects was holding the remote control. Pablo's mother initially offered a wide selection of toys to see whether he would trade the remote control for another item she offered, but he didn't seem to care about the other objects. Instead, Mom started thinking about what effects or actions she might use to capture his attention herself. She had seen Pablo smile briefly when tickled by his older sister, so she tried that first. To her surprise, Pablo laughed. She didn't worry at this point about taking the remote control out of his hands. Instead, she held up her hands and wiggled her fingers each time she said the word tickle. Pablo didn't pull away, but in fact, leaned in toward his mother in anticipation of the next tickle. As Pablo relaxed into the game, he loosened his grip on the remote control, and his mother was able to gently take it out of his hand while continuing to tickle him. Once out of his reach, she placed it behind her so it would remain out of sight and not distract him from the game. Pablo's mother also found other ways to tickle him, such as blowing raspberries on his neck and belly. She showed him how to pull up his shirt before tickling him on his belly, and she made sure to respond right away each time Pablo did this. When Pablo tired, she offered other objects he might want to hold and showed him how they operate, such as banging the wooden spoon on the table or pushing the buttons on a toy phone. With the remote control out of sight, Pablo was more open to exploring new things. He still tended to repeat the same action with the object, but now Mom knew she could get him away from the remote control and engage him in activities more appropriate for learning. What about Matthias? Matthias was the child who had very little interest in objects. He preferred to lie on the back of the couch and look out the window most of the time. His dad could not figure out how to interest him in his toys, and after each attempt, Matthias returned to the couch. So Matthias's dad tried a different approach to interact with Matthias. The next time Matthias walked toward the couch, his dad lifted him up and dropped him onto the couch. He repeated this game a few times, helping Matthias climb off the couch, lifting out his arms to pick Matthias up, and dropping him onto the couch. Now Matthias started to understand the game, and after falling, he walked over to Dad to be picked up and dropped again. In trying to figure out what Matthias enjoyed, his dad realized that Matthias enjoyed more than just the couch, and smiled and came back for more when he was tossed into the air. So Dad experimented a little with some other movement games. He found that Matthias loved being flipped up onto his shoulder and airplaned around the room, loved being bounced actively on the big exercise ball, loved having his dad flip him onto the bed and push on his chest with a pillow, and loved being dried roughly after his bath with a big towel and a lot of action. During these kinds of activities, Matthias was much more likely to laugh, smile, look at Dad, and pull on Dad to repeat the game. Matthias's dad discovered that he could also bring a stuffed animal into these physical games on the bed and use the stuffed bear to tickle and push him. Matthias would reach out to the bear for more play, the first interest he had shown in his stuffed animals. Matthias enjoyed it when Dad sang "Head, Shoulders, Knees, and Toes" as he dried those body parts with a towel. And he enjoyed it when Dad stood in front of him instead of behind to swing him at the park, swinging him strongly and then catching him in his arms. Matthias would laugh, wiggle, and look at Dad expectantly for the next push. Dad's detective work and experimenting have helped him identify many activities that Matthias enjoys. Step 2. Step onto the stage. Take your position. Rationale. Social communication occurs especially through eyes, faces, and bodies. We want children to look at us, to make repeated eye contact, and to have clear views of our faces, expressions, gaze patterns, and mouths as we talk. In general, having children sit down when we play with them helps us get in their spotlight or focus of attention. Sitting down helps focus your child's attention because the chair provides support and keeps your child from moving away easily. Sitting in front of your child to read a book or play with a toy may seem like an odd way to position yourself. But holding a child in your lap to read won't allow you to engage in face-to-face interaction and limits social exchange. Once you get used to reading books and playing in front of your child, it will become a habit, and you won't have to think about it anymore. If you use a beanbag chair or any chair that has arms and provides support, Your child will be more likely to stay focused on the interactive activity. Think of yourself as a preschool teacher, not grandma. You need to get the child's attention, not cuddle during this time. Activity. Find positions that put you in the spotlight. When you are playing with or caring for your child, start to position yourself in such a way that your child has a very clear view of your face and eyes. As much as possible, try to be close up, on the same level, and face to face with your child during both play and caregiving activities. We can't overemphasize the importance of positioning to increase your child's attention to people and learning opportunities. Here are some ideas for positioning yourself and your child so that learning occurs more easily. Positions in which your child is lying down on his back and you are seated while leaning over him are wonderful for social games, finger plays, and little songs and routines. Diaper changing time, whether on the changing table or on the floor, is a great time to be positioned face to face and to talk to your child and sing some little songs or finger games as part of the diaper change. Sitting on the floor with your legs out in front of you, with your child on her back, on top of your legs, or between them, is also a great position for tummy tickles or creepy fingers, and for playing social games like This Little Piggy, Peekaboo, Patty Cake, Round and Round the Garden, and Where is Thumbkin? Physical play routines on your bed or a couch provide excellent face-to-face positioning, both when the child is lying down and when the child is standing. Seat your child on your lap, facing you, or on a small chair, beanbag chair, high chair, or corner of a living room chair or couch while you are sitting on the floor in front of him. This is a terrific face-to-face position for songs, finger plays, toy play, and reading books, as well as for dressing routines, shirts, pants, socks, and shoes. Keeping a face-to-face position is easier when you use some supports, a beanbag chair or pillow for your child to lean on or sit against, a couch, chair, or your knees for your child to lean against, a small table or chair for sitting or standing play. Social games and even book activities can be carried out face-to-face with the book held in front of your child, your hands pointing to pictures, and your eyes and face in front of and close to your child's face, ready to make eye contact, facial expressions, key words, and sound effects. When seating your child, make sure her back and feet are well supported, so your child is comfortable and can attend to you rather than in an uncomfortable position. Her back should be against the back of the chair, her feet flat on the ground. Think about right angles. In a chair that fits your child's hips, knees, and ankles should all be at approximately 90 degrees. Feet should not be dangling in the air. For toddlers, a little step stool is often a perfect height, and if you push it against the wall, there is also back support. Children, and adults too, as you know from experience, are more comfortable when a chair fits them well, and they will stay in it longer. Beanbag chairs are very helpful. We recommend them for all families. They allow you to seat your child in front of you with good support. Children also like to lie in them, and you can play many social games in that position. Some young children want to move so much that they do not want to sit for very long. However, standing can also be a good face-to-face position, and for this, a coffee table or child table is a great asset. Many youngsters like to stand at a table and play with toys, and it is easy for you to go to the other side of the table and be there, face to face, to join in. It will help if the table is heavy, so it will not slide when your child leans on it, and it should be low enough that your child can lean against it at the waist and have arms free to handle objects and reach to you. Your position can be across from your child or at the corner where the two of you can face each other across the corner of the table. Avoid playing with your child side by side. It's too hard for your child to see your face that way. Activity: Take advantage of mealtimes. Mealtimes in a high chair or toddler seat provide easy opportunities for a face-to-face position at the kitchen table, especially if they are set up as social times. It's tempting to have young children feed themselves while parents finish preparing food, rather than having a social meal. However, for children with autism, each mealtime and snack time at the table presents a rich opportunity to work on social attention and interaction. Here are some ideas for increasing your child's attention to you during meals. Instead of giving your child the finger food on his tray, pull the high chair right up to one end of the dinner table and orient your chair so it is facing the high chair tray, so you can easily face your child and have a meal or snack with him. Place your child's food on the table and provide a little on a plate for your child and a little on your plate for you. Have fun talking about the food. When your child has finished the small portion you gave her, offer more, but don't hand it to her until your child has signaled in some way that she wants it. It can be any subtle behavior, a brief look to you, a reach toward the food, a point, or a sound or word, but wait for your child to do something, and then treat that behavior as an attempt to communicate with you. Once you hear or see it, quickly hand over the food while saying something like this, "More? Sure, you can have more." Offer your child a bite, and then encourage your child to give you a bite by leaning toward your child with your mouth open. Place your child's cup on the table out of reach, but within sight. Hold it up in front of your child and ask if he wants it before handing it to him. Put just a little in the cup so he will quickly finish and need more. Then, when your child has finished it and wants more, offer another pour, but wait for that communication before you provide it. As the meal is ending, sing a little song or two with finger plays before you finish. Help your child make a gesture that goes with the song by moving her hands through the motion. Songs are great language builders. Sitting face to face like this at the table is a great position for gaining social attention, and managing the food for the child brings your child's beam of attention to you. Summary of Step 2. If you have followed along and carried out the preceding activities, you will have found a number of ways to step into the spotlight of your child's attention. See if you agree with most of the statements in the following checklist. If so, you are now armed with important skills for stepping into your child's attentional focus. You will use this knowledge for step 3. If you have not quite mastered using these skills, start experimenting with each of these one at a time during play with your child until you have found some ways to accomplish them. Activity Checklist. Am I in the spotlight during activities with my child? When we are interacting, my child can easily see my eyes, face, body actions, and movements. My child is looking at me sometimes when we engage in activities together. I am in front of my child at the child's level and face to face, not towering over my child. I have figured out ways to rearrange things a little to be face-to-face with my child during play and caregiving activities. My child is in front of me and sitting or standing comfortably, sitting on the floor, sitting in a chair that fits, or standing at a table that is a good height for playing. What about Pablo? After completing the checklist for step two, Pablo's mom realized that she spent a lot of energy following after Pablo, rather than creating the right social zones for play. One of her habits was offering Pablo objects when he was walking away from her or not looking at her. She decided that an important step to help Pablo learn was rearranging the play area to make it a better fit for Pablo's size and focus of attention. She pulled the coffee table closer to the couch, so that when Pablo stood at it, his body was more supported by the couch. It was also an easy way to wrangle him in without forcing him to sit in a chair, a task that was difficult for Pablo, except during meal times. Pablo also liked pillows, so she brought in some from the bedroom and propped them against the wall to create a soft, plush seating area without having to buy a beanbag chair. Finally, Mom thought about other opportunities throughout the day at home where she could create a better spotlight of attention. During dinner, it was difficult for her to remain seated because her other children always needed things from the fridge or help with cutting their food. During the day at snack time, though, when she and Pablo were alone, staying seated was more manageable. Mom decided that she would seat Pablo facing her while she drank her morning coffee as a way to interact and engage with him. She also realized that when Pablo became tired, he usually wanted to be held. She decided to hold him in her arms with his face looking up at hers rather than seated with his back to her and maximize this face-to-face time by singing his favorite songs. What about Matthias? After completing the step two checklist, Dad thought of more ways to enter Matthias's spotlight of attention. Since Matthias already enjoyed lying on the couch, Dad was able to lean over him and establish face-to-face contact as he started and continued more active games. Dad created other games to do on the couch that required Matthias to sit upright, such as bouncing on the couch, being lifted up for blast-off like a rocket ship, and falling forward into Dad's arms. As Matthias sought out these games, his tolerance for sitting improved, and Dad introduced books to Matthias and encouraged him to look at books with Dad while seated on the couch. He made sure to add fun sound effects and exaggerated motions to keep Matthias amused. Dad also brought a child-sized table and chair into the family room and gradually started placing a few books and other toys he thought Matthias might enjoy on the table. The two started transitioning to the table and chair when coming into the family room and before going to the couch. Over a few weeks, Dad was able to increase their time interacting together at the table. Also, any time Matthias needed help that involved an object, taking something out of a container, opening a snack item, Dad took Matthias over to the family room or kitchen table and had him sit down before helping. Matthias started to learn about other locations in the house besides the couch where fun and enjoyable things could happen. Step 3. Eliminate the competition. Rationale. The physical environment can be a powerful pull for your child's attention. Observing your child will tell you what the attentional magnets are in a particular space. Video or computer images, mechanical toys, and moving objects can compete strongly with parents who are trying to capture their children's attention. You may need to control and engineer the environment so that you have less competition for your child's attention. Activity. Notice distractors and manage them. As you join your child for a face-to-face play or caregiving activity, observe your child's attention and identify the objects in the environment that take your child's attention away from you. Once you notice one, take steps to minimize it. Here are some ideas for managing distractors. During toy play, put loose toys away on shelves or out of sight so that toys you are not using are not attracting your child's attention. Toys can go into cabinets with doors, into toy boxes, or even on open shelves covered with a blanket. Turn off the TV unless someone is actively watching it. Keeping a TV running is a powerful attention magnet for little children with autism. During playtime, try to turn off the computer and TV screens. During social play, if the environment is busy and keeps distracting your child, go into another room. A big bed is often a great place for social play. During bath time, give your child with autism a bath without others in the room, if it's possible, so you can engage more with him. During meal times, if several children are having meals at once, see if you can intersperse the food routines for your child with ASD, described earlier, with mealtime chat with your other children and adults at the table. However, don't feel that you need to feed your child alone. The social mix of a family table is a very important experience for your child, as long as she is attending to others as well as to food. I found that moving toys into bins was helpful in many ways. Not only did it remove distractions, but it gave me opportunities to teach cleanup skills and to push for more words to ask for specific boxes and toys. Having boxes of different colors can help to teach colors, while having clear boxes can help to provide motivation to request the toys inside. My son was reluctant to ask for things, but would eventually request his favorite cars when he could see them inside of a box, helping us teach more and more complex phrases, although this would also help teach pointing skills. What about other people? When your child with autism is just beginning to learn how to interact and pay attention to others, having several people try to interact with your child at the same time you are trying to can be distracting. It's wonderful when several family members want to play together, but it's also important to think about your child's attentional spotlight. Children without ASD are highly skilled at switching back and forth between different people and activities. But children with ASD have difficulty attending to even one person, and you are actively working to build that capacity to help your child learn. Social interactions are the most important teaching tools you have, and you need to protect and increase your child's interactions and attention to parents, siblings, and important others. In the beginning, it will be helpful to keep the spotlight on one person at a time. If other people are trying to interact with your child at the same time you are, your child's attention will be diverted from you. When no one commands the spotlight, no learning can occur. So try to encourage everyone to interact one at a time with your child, and not to interrupt your child's attention and interaction with another person in the group. Later, as your child's ability to pay attention to others improves, you should check to see if he can switch attention from one person to another and interact with both. This is an important skill, too. It's how families interact as a group. However, for now, here are some ideas to manage multiple interactions.